All right, going to call this meeting together, first meeting of the month, March 8th.
I pledge allegiance to the flag of the United States of America and to the republic for which it stands, one nation, under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all.
All right, welcome, everybody. We are holding our first commission meeting of the month. And on the agenda,
is Brad on the phone?
Do we have?
No, I called and the message didn't follow.
Okay, so we do not, just for the record, Brad was unable to be here, our Commissioner Brad Kleinfelter. And if he can, he will call in. So present is just Steve Tucker and myself, Pete Nanky. So on the agenda, do we have any changes or revisions to the agenda?
Actually, we've got a revised agenda, which I have there.
So this is a revised agenda from Friday, right?
Right, this was just put out today, the revision. Everybody has that attached to their packet. And the revision is Greg wrote up a new agenda bill for regular business A, hoist operation or options. And then also, in addition, we have regular business B, the curb grant.
Okay.
So we probably need to approve.
So we do need to approve this. And then while we're doing that, what about the executive session? Looks like we have one listed here.
Two litigations.
Two litigations. Are there decisions to be made on these matters?
I don't think so.
How long?
And is there personnel also?
Yeah, there's a personnel.
Yep.
Yep, personnel and two litigations.
And how long?
I'd say we need half hour. Yep.
30 minutes? Okay, so for 30 minutes. All right, so I'll make a motion that we approve the agenda with the executive session on the revised agenda.
I'll second that motion.
All those in favor?
Aye.
Aye. All right, moving on to the consent agenda. We've all read the consent agenda.
I move we approve the consent agenda.
And I'll second. All those in favor?
Aye.
Aye. Public comments not related to the agenda. Anybody in the audience? Time to talk. George.
Thank you for a great workshop.
You're welcome.
Very, very.
Yeah, that was interesting. We had a great workshop on potential projects that could be utilized throughout the county, for particularly agriculture. We had a lot of interesting thoughts about agriculture. All right, moving on to part five, second reading, nothing there. First reading, nothing there. We're at part seven of regular business, hoist operations, number A.
Chair, if I could make a note before we get started. We received some feedback from the public, and I just wanted to address it. And it's very good feedback for us in that oftentimes myself and sometimes Greg might appear uninterested in what's happening because we're looking at our computers. And I wanted to assure everyone that we are very much paying attention. And we're taking notes on what to do. So we'll try to make more regular eye contact with the members of the public. So, and it is just thanks for the feedback, somebody.
Cool. All right. So regular business, hoist options.
So in effect, we have basically replacement value on the 75-ton hoist, so that's what we're going to see. Now, there's three options basically in front of us that we looked at. And that would be, obviously, we place a 75-ton at $0, and that would be a revenue neutral cents. Or we could go opt for an 85-ton hoist, which there's two options on that. There's one that's a little bit more expensive that actually has some quieting, some hoist quieting equipment on the engine, as well as it also has some special rigging for dealing with sailboats. So it's and that one is in stock, and that's slightly more expensive, about $64,000 above the existing cost. It's not determined whether or not the insurance company will cover that differential. They may, because it's in stock, and if you look at the value of having that here for 3 months, if it's up to, it's 90 days or sooner is the delivery, but that one's in stock. So if we get that out here you know, we obviously we get 3 months benefit during the, as the busy season starts to increase. So they may actually find, but we haven't got that determination yet from the insurance company, they may find that that's worthwhile to actually go with a time option. As long as we can physically do that, as long as the pier can actually do that. So we did, we're awaiting the structural engineer inspection of the pier to do the calcs. That's been submitted to Reed Middleton, actually. And so they're supposed to get those calcs back to us imminently. As soon, I told them basically 48 hours, and they said, we'll do it as quickly as we can, but you know, because time is of the essence. So those are, there's a, and then there's the 85 ton, which we could go out. It's a little bit less expensive. It's still more than 75 ton. I think it's 43,000 or so more. And so I guess the question is, the action that's being requested is, we believe, based upon the market, which, so basically there's a class of vessel, Purse Seiners, which is a really large, large press for repair and maintenance in the yard. I'll see a couple of them over there. Limit Seiners, what they call them, Limit Seiners, are 58 feet long, and they just, they hit that 80 ton to 85 ton sweet spot, which is obviously large, you know, greater than what the 75 ton can currently handle. So that would open up that market for being able to handle that without putting it over on the 300 tons lift. And the 300 ton slot, it only has 22 stalls in the yard. And we're trying to fill basically all the rest of the yard, which is only ballasted for, you know, the 75 ton. So that's what we're trying to do the calcs on with the engineers, is to make sure that we can use the 85 ton on the pier. But I think that it's, and I talked to all the, you know, the staff, Terry Kyle, yard manager, and a lot of people, and they felt that they would like to go with the 85 ton long term. It's a, to them, it's a no-brainer. It's a, clearly it could help us in terms of being able to commercial value. So that's our recommendation, is that if we can, we should go with the 85 ton. If we can get it for 3 months ahead of the other 85 ton waste, we pay a small slight differential, but over the life of that piece of equipment is nothing. So the action request is that we are, have approval if the structural engineer gives us the thumbs up, calcs, hoist pier can actually handle an 85 ton, then we would go forward with that. If the engineer comes back and says hoist pier can't handle it, then we'll just have to go with the 75 ton, and then we'll send a purchase order to them for that.
So, but is the yard ballasted, the small yard, you said ballasted for 75 ton, the 85 ton isn't going to make any difference on ballasting of the yard, or we'll have to have some extra ballasting done for that?
We shouldn't have to add much ballasting. It's not, it's, or do much with the ballast, because it actually has a little bit larger tires that distributes the load over a larger area. It's really the deadlift constraint on the pier that's really that's the limiting factor of what your actual total amount. The movement around on the yard is not really going to have any kind of impact.
How, when you say in stock, what are we talking about?
It's ready to go. It's 7 to 10 days out. I mean, it's however long it takes them to ship here.
Right.
Yeah.
So, I mean, do you have a sense of, once we say, yeah, we want it, I mean, it's got to be taken apart. It's got to be trucked here.
It's already taken apart. It's already on, it was actually being trucked back to my show. Oh. So, it might even still be on the truck, but it's already ready to go.
All right.
Yeah.
Audience.
So, Greg, in the aviation world, we typically run things that are rated for higher capacities and just put a red line mark and say, you know, under the current operating circumstances, this is the red line.
Sure.
And can, it sounds like that there's a real advantage to being able to go ahead with the 85 ton. The only thing that's standing in the way possibly is the engineer's approval to operate it at that capacity. Is there, why not just redline it at 75 ton if that's it, and wait for the engineer's approval, or you know, follow on amendments to the capacity of the structures?
Well, that's a good question. I mean, we just go, like you said, we just want to go to the 85 ton, but there's a $64,000 differential. So that, I guess the question
does the insurance cover business loss?
That is to be determined.
Anybody else? So what do you think, Mr. Commissioner?
Well, I wish we didn't have these unknowns.
Yeah.
How long is it going to be before we know these unknowns?
The engineers, they said, you know, they're going to try to, you know, within, I said 48 hours when I want the calcs done. So
that was when?
Well, I talked to them yesterday again, and they said they should be able to get it. It has more to do with the calcs that were done originally are pretty robust, is my understanding, but they're getting them from the engineering firm which did the work years ago. So, I mean, I'm hoping that we know by Friday. They said if they get it sooner, they will. But they'll have to look at those calcs, you know.
I thought they said today.
Monday's an inspection, so they'll have the, so there's a two-fold we're having it inspected as well, but that should.
Well, I would think that if we can't utilize the 85 ton because our travel lift isn't sufficient, $65,000 extra dollars is a bunch of money that will never be utilized. And I don't know how much you could, if you could reinforce the pier or not, but.
I think that'd be a huge, that'd be a big undertaking at this point. I mean, that doesn't make sense, but if it can, you know, there's a safety, like, you know, Bill was pointing out, there's obviously safety, a service factor on that
right.
pier that's pretty substantial. I don't know what that is, though, exactly. So that's why we just want to make sure structural.
I kind of think you need to reword. I mean, I think we should go with the 85 ton, but I think the decision really is, I mean, I think the instruction that we're going to give you is, yeah, go with the 85 ton as soon as you find out.
Contingent upon.
Right,
Right.
Yeah. And then if you don't, let's go with the 75. I really don't want to wait another couple of weeks
right.
to bring this back to us.
That was our thinking, yeah.
How have we been doing with just limping along with the 60 ton and the 300 ton? Have we been turning away business? I mean, realize, well, actually, I shouldn't say it's this slow. You look at it from the highway and it looks like it's filling right up.
Mm-hmm.
So we've been able to keep up with that.
But they're putting, you know, some of the boats, like there was a number of vessels, they had like at least three vessels, I think, that they've already had to put on the 300 ton lift that would normally be on the 75 ton.
Mm-hmm.
And
so they're taking up space in the heavy yard.
Right, and you're not going to, and then you're constrained in terms of getting enough vessels going into the small yard, which is where they have actually the most room.
Because the heavy yard,
it's not full, but you know they're also going to be, you know, all the business is going to start coming in here imminent. You know,
right.
You know.
Yeah, I think it's starting to now, isn't it?
So they're like, you know, right now everything is good, but that's but they're slow, but that's not going to hold.
Okay.
It's looking up pretty solid.
So I think we should just go with that. If the pier will hold it, get it. If it won't, get the little one. Is that the way you're consensus?
Yeah.
And
if I might add in, not to speak for Commissioner Kleinfelder, but we did meet with him, independently knowing that he was likely going to be absent today and knowing that this won't count as a vote, but his thoughts were basically in line with what your discussion is, that if the calculations come back that the docs will support it, that it opens up this new market for us.
Yay.
Yeah. So do you need that in a motion for us?
Yes.
That's outside of your office. So I'll make a motion that we do go with the 85 ton that is in stock for $64,000 or $502,661. If it's deemed that the dock will hold, the haul-out dock will hold that weight, and if not, then we'll go with the 75 ton at $438,561.
I second that motion.
And all those in favor?
Aye.
Aye.
Just on for the record to note that this motion will suffice to give us the authority to move ahead. I would like to come back and amend the capital plan to have this reflected so that we have that in the capital plan. We have some other issues. So just to have that capital plan really serve as our record of the decisions that are going in that budget. So we will follow along with that, and that's a fine thing to do process-wise. I just want to bring that back in front of you, and we'll have some other things to talk about there as well.
Thank you. B, Resolution 661-17, recreational fishing industry.
Okay, that's something that I brought up because I've been going to meetings with the recreational group of folks to the Washington Department of Fish and Wildlife for their halibut setting season. And I've been doing this for, I've only been to three meetings, I think, but other people in this room have been to like seven of them. And the trend is pretty clear. 10 years ago, we used to have 70 days of fishing on the water, or actually 72. And then it went down to 64, and then it kept going down and down and down and down. And with that, by shortening the days, that meant people had less time to be on the water, and that limited the economic benefits that the communities around this halibut fishery gained. And we're one of those communities. We're, I'm not sure that there's too many other communities east of us that really do halibut much, but Port Townsend, for years, we used to have not really a big derby like Port Angeles has, but a small one, a Snow King Derby, they called it, and they would come and rent entire Point Hudson, fill it full of boats, and of course these are fishing boats, so you don't stay on them. So then they build the hotels and restaurants, and they stay here for 3 days, and they fish for halibut and have a great time. And of course, at the same time, the boat ramp parking lot would be chock full of boats because this is the first place you can come and have any real chance of catching halibut. Well, that's been going down and down and down and down to where, if you look on the website today, the WDFW website, they have 3 days, and they say it'll probably stop after that because then we're going to cut it off based on a quota. So what we have been suggesting for many years, a group of us that have been going to the Washington Department of Fish and Wildlife, is to stop limiting fish by days, but limit fish by, like you would like a deer tag, you know, by quotas. So change it so that, because there's two problems you have: the limited numbers of days that people come here and be fishing on the water, and then the days that are set at the first of the year without any regard to weather. And when you had 60 days, you could say, okay, I'm not going to go fishing today, it's too crappy out, I'll just wait for a good day. When you have 3 days, you don't have that luxury. And actually, I think it will take the time to read this. This was in the paper today in the PDN from Pat Neal, and I just read it before this. I think I'll read it out loud. It shouldn't take long. Some say there's no such thing as coincidence. They say it's luck, fate, or God working in some mysterious way. Coincidence becomes legend, soon lost in a world that only cares about late breaking news. Still, I will never forget my own coincidence. Saturday, May 5th, 1990, the opening day of halibut season. Mother's Day was coming up. We all wanted to get some fresh halibut for the mothers. I was all set to go halibut fishing, but by a strange coincidence, a buddy called to remind me that I promised to help his roof that Saturday. I didn't go fishing. That was no problem. There was plenty of time to catch a Mother's Day halibut. And besides, it was a good job roofing the house with old-growth cedar shakes. In fact, the whole house was made of cedar. It made what real estate agents called a territorial view of the Strait of Juan de Fuca and beyond all the way across to Canada. It was just a coincidence that I wasn't fishing in what would have been one of the most terrifying disasters in the history of the Strait of Juan de Fuca. We were working all morning, then along about lunch, the wind kicked up. The shakes that weren't nailed down were blowing off the roof. The strait was suddenly whipped into 10-foot swells by a 61-mile-an-hour wind. My friends were out there. The people who survived the storm all said the same thing. The water was flat as a pond 1 minute and deadly the next. People ran out of fuel trying to fight the wind and waves to get to shore in a desperate attempt to land through the surf. The Coast Guard started rescuing people at about noon. A helicopter airlifted two people off a sailboat just used to Port Angeles in a rescue that seemed miraculous in the wind, waves, and broken rigging of the vessel. Clallam County Search and Rescue pulled fishermen from the surf at Crescent Beach. Coast Guard helicopters searched through the shoreline through the night in hopes they might spot more boaters at sea or stranded on the beach, but they didn't. The search, which included three Coast Guard cutters, resumed the next morning. No one else was rescued. The bodies of four fishermen were found between Morris Creek and Discovery Bay. My friend Don Well was never found. The search was called off the following Monday. Now I'm going to skip some of this and then go to Ben. Our halibut season seems to be carved in stone by a bureaucracy with no regard for human safety. People would like to be able to choose the weather in which they venture out to fish for halibut. It's Coast Guard personnel are the ones risking their lives making these hazardous rescues and let the coasties set the halibut season. That's his recommendation, but they're not offering us to do that. But we have an enormous ability to change this now. But it's only getting worse and worse and worse. It's not getting better, and we've been discussing this for years, and I believe it's my personal opinion that the Fish and Wildlife just thinks it's worth a couple of cantankerous old fishermen over there whining about stuff. And I think they need to understand, and they will, because the same resolution has been passed by the Port of Port Angeles and the City of Port Angeles and the County of Clallam County. They passed this resolution, so they'll understand that it's really something serious. We're in the luxurious spot of being able to change something. You know, like they always talk about, you can't change an intersection that's deadly until someone dies. Well, I'd like to say that we're changing an intersection before someone by taking this intervention now. And I'm not going to get into the weeds about all the things that caused this, but I think that all we're trying to do is to jumpstart WDFW and the people that they interact with, the IPHC, the International Halibut Commission, and to understand that when the halibut fishery is not in danger. We've been getting more allocation. It's a healthy fishery. What they've been doing is giving the recreational share of the increase to a bycatch of sablefish. And, you know, that's good for the few sablefish people, but it's devastating for the recreational people who are risking their lives. So that's why I brought this resolution to the port, because we're directly affected by this. So I think there's some other people out there who would like to say some things. Okay.
I have a question, Sue. I don't have a copy of the resolution in my packet. It's on the back.
Probably looking at the additional pages that were added to the agenda. It would be on your original packet. Okay. Do you need an original packet?
Anyway, okay. So we'll go from it. Yes, go ahead.
Well, the apparent intent is objective of the Halibut Commission is to reduce the catch. And one indication of that is that in years past, these reduced number of days have at least been staggered around so that you could maybe fish a day or two in Port Angeles, but then a week later fish out at Nia Bay for a day or two. That's no longer possible because the 3 days that are open are the same inside, outside, everywhere, which means legally you can only catch 3 halibut per year. Understand? Keep the numbers down. However, our friends who are infinitely better informed and more consumer-oriented in British Columbia have a very adequate and reasonable system whereby you can fish for halibut 11 months out of the year, any day of the week. You can go out when the weather's terrible if you're stupid, or you go out when it's nice. But you're allowed only 6 per year, regardless of where you fish in British Columbia. You're only allowed 6. If the intention of the commission is to reduce the catch, then go with the BC system, fish almost all year, and have a punch card that allows you to catch 3, 4, or 5 most. Much safer. Makes a lot of sense.
Thank you. Anybody else?
Yeah, I just wanted to say the state is trying to do a really good job, the Washington Department of Fish and Wildlife. But their approach is to try to computerize everything. And they have all these algorithms that programmers have designed on estimating sizes of fish populations and how many people are fishing. And then they have airplanes flying over Puget Sound and counting the number of boats, and that gets all plugged into their model. And they try to estimate how many fish are being caught. But for years, we've been saying these programs are wrong. What they're saying or being caught are not being witnessed by the public. You know, when people come in, there are not that many fish actually being brought in. But yet they're saying there were three times as many fish caught based on this computer program and all these pictures taken from airplanes. And they basically say, hey, there's this many boats out here. That means they caught that many fish today. And then they extrapolate that, and that's how they come up with the numbers. And we feel the numbers are way off. And that this is such a draconian reaction to their computer modeling that there's no, proof of what's going on. We've suggested for years, we go to their meetings and ask them to improve on this process. And they say, oh, yeah, that's a good idea. And then we come back the next year to make the same suggestions. Oh, yeah, that's a great idea. And they just keep blowing us off year after year after year. But this year, the season's almost gone. With 3 days, we are going to have the possibility of loss of life property. And if we can do something to wake up the state, you know, I know the governor doesn't fish, and there's a lot of other people in government that couldn't care less about recreational fishing, but there's like 250,000 people in Puget Sound that fish. And it's important to them. It may not be important to a lot of other people, but that's a lot of people. And do we want to risk people being killed and boats being lost? And so that's the whole reason. We're trying to wake them up. And, you know, they can ignore us, but at least if we get enough communities along the Strait of Juan de Fuca saying that this should be changed, that we want to be treated like Canada is treated. If I go across to Canada, if I go out 8 miles across, then it's a completely different system. Same fish, but they have different rules over there. And we're just saying, hey, take a look at what works and see if you can adjust our rules to fit their rules a little bit. Thank you.
My name is Troy McKelvey, Port Townsend. I've been going to the halibut season setting meetings for 7 years or so. And last year, for the first time ever, every year we go to meetings and we say, why don't you ask the International Halibut Commission for more allocation? And the reply is always the same. Well, I'll ask them, but they never do that. And last year we got 150,000 pound extra allocation for the state of Washington and divided half of it with the tribes and their co-managers. And they gave the other half, 70,000 pounds, to the sablefish industry. There's 13 sablefish licenses in the state of Washington. No increase for recreational fishing. In fact, they cut our season from 8 days, now down to 3. February 9th, the city of Port Town, or Port Angeles City Council, Port of Port Angeles, passed a resolution to ask the Fish and Wildlife to consider the economic benefits to our coastal communities when they set these rules. And on February 9th, Representative Vandewedge, Theringer, and Chapman all issued a letter published on the internet asking Fish and Wildlife to reconsider the way they are cutting the seasons in regards to the economics of our community. And I think that we should pass this resolution and add a different view to the people who make the rules, that it hurts everybody. It's not just a matter of giving the fish to commercial interests.
Thank you. Appreciate it. Yep. In the back.
I'm Jerry Johnson, president of Puget Sound Anglers Chapter. I want to thank the court for your support of our chapter. On the 24th of this month, the All-PSA Derby will start at Point Hudson, evening of the 24th. We fish Saturday, Sunday morning. That being said, the information on the resolution here, the International Pacific Halibut Commission, it's my understanding coming through the CCA is that that commission is meeting in Vancouver, BC. Right now, our representative from SQUIM, Dave Kroonquist, who is very tenacious, is he's there, and he would like to have a copy of this resolution sent to him, in addition to the other resolution. I learned in that email that I received that on one of these commissions, I think there's six members, and four of those members are from Alaska, and they look after the interest of the, both the recreational and commercial interests of the Alaskan fishermen. So we're kind of what I consider the master cat at the end of the list. Another part of the equation, and I would build on what Ron just said, two ladies that manage the halibut seasons here for the WDFW, they're employees of WDFW, Michelle Tolbert and Heather Reed. We've been around them, we've met with them for years at these different meetings, and my personal experience, they have a very intense hatred for recreation or fishermen. There's no mystery why that is. There has to be a reason, but it is very evident. Walk up, talk. So, with that being said, the impact of that is that they want us off the water. They do not want us fishing for halibut, period. And it's very, very evident. So, I support the resolution. It's another piece of ammunition that Dave Boonkris can use in Vancouver, and we've got to keep pushing. We can't give up on it, or we won't be fishing for help.
Jerry, can that commission in Vancouver put pressure on WDFW here?
No, this is the International Pacific Halibut Commission, and I believe the Pacific Fishery Management Council is represented there as well.
Okay.
Two ladies that I mentioned, I believe, work with that Fishery Management Council to implement the decisions that they make as far as quotas, allocations, and so forth. Now, they have the freedom to give that 70,000 pounds of halibut to the recreational fishermen last year, and they chose not to do it. Thank you.
Okay. Yes, real quick. We're kind of running out of time.
To the superiority and the reasons behind the British Columbia approach to halibut, and that is they, in the last few years, have had a size restriction so that legally you may not keep a halibut over about 70 pounds. The reason for that is that halibut over 70 pounds are the breeders. So if I legally catch a 150-pound halibut in Washington, I've taken away millions and millions of potential little halibut by killing that big fish. And some people think the big fish don't taste as good, so why do we even have to? Why can't we just do what BC does? Period.
Okay, one more and then we're done.
My name is Roger Sorensen. Thank you for letting me have the opportunity. I talked with Heather, and she was a very reasonable person to talk to. Gave me a copy of a draft of a letter that was sent to actually the city council here at Fort Townsend that you guys may not have received. That's very interesting information on it. Concepts that you have are outstanding on how to extend the season. I did some quick math on what the information that's in this memo. The sport fishermen in Washington get 23% of the allocation for the unit 2A, which starts at British Columbia and goes all the way to California. It breaks it out who gets what portion. This year there's 1.3 million pounds of halibut that will be available for harvest. Look at what the anglers get that comes out. I did real quick math there. It looks like we're going to get about 78. The average size fish is 17 pounds. There's 78,000 fish halibut that can be harvested in this state. Of those, or in this unit, of those 18,000 of those animals are going to be available to the state of Washington. The average size is 17 pounds. What you're asking for, in somebody having six halibut on a tag, that means there's going to be 3,000 halibut anglers if you get your way with its current allocations in the state of Washington for the entire year starting 2018. It's a good concept in terms of limiting them, much like you do with deer. You could get an application to do that. Another concept that you could ask for to extend the season so people can go out there is look at catch and release. Halibut are very easy to catch and release because they don't have a swim bladder. You can extend the season, recreational opportunities, and move forward. But under the current one, where you're suggesting a six fish per person per year, I tell you what, there's only going to be a few thousand, and it's going to be a draw. And you'll see what happens. But there is a limit. Your best thing to do is to try to get an increase in the number that are allocated to Washington State's forces. Or try to buy some of what the Indians have.
Doesn't have to be six, it could be four.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, so you divide 18.
Okay, million. Guys, we've got to keep going here. You can have that discussion outside.
Yeah, I move. Do we accept this resolution?
I second it.
All in favor?
Aye. Thank you.
All right, moving along to, and good luck with that, you guys.
All right, thank you.
We're with you, 119%. So, yeah, you should take those women fishing. Point C, Madam Director.
Yes. We are seeking approval from the commission to apply for another community economic revitalization planning grant. This one would be for our Wilson properties. If we are successful in this, it would be awarded as part of this biennium's budget. We would not have to be under contract until the next biennium, but there is money still in the curb coffers for this. I don't have an assessment of our likelihood of this point. I just don't know how many applications are expected and how many funds are left yet, but I will know that once we submit. Similar to the last one we applied for, it is up to $50,000. We would ask for that with a 25% match, and that so that comes out to just under $17,000 of match. We would, again, if successful, we would use that for 2018 in our work plan. So we get under contract this year with CURB and then go through a consultant selection process and get somebody on to help us. This would allow us to really look at our properties and come up with a game plan to augment the efforts that Greg has already been doing down there with staff of what are the near-term measures that we can do, and then what are there some other longer-term uses for property. So I'd like permission to proceed with the application.
Yeah, no, I agree. I think it's great. So let's go. Do you need a motion?
That's a motion.
That's a second. All those in favor?
Aye.
Okay. Yeah, and so again, you're putting the resolution, and then we'll get that sent in.
Yes.
Thank you.
D, rate sheet form.
Yeah, so I'd like to pass these around to Hinkey. So what you have in front of you is after the commission approved the rates, we went back and did a couple of things. So I'm offering this a RADA sheet for the rates that you adopted. They're fairly minor in nature. One of the things that happened is there's some kind of rounding errors that our software Torina package does that if we lower some of the amounts that are noted in red by a dollar, then it comes out to an even dollar as we charge to the customer.
What do you mean noted in red? I don't see
somewhere here there's there it is.
Yeah. On the errata sheet in the regular packet. In the regular packet. This list 8 to 14. So some of these are what I refer to as ministerial changes. Really, it's just for us to be able to administer the program. In all cases, this would be a lowering of the monthly permanent rates by $1, so that the rates did not go up at all. There are other instances on here where we had some transposing of numbers, and that's why I handed out this sheet, because this is This is the format that we're going to be presenting any other rate proposals to you in. So what had happened is that we had calculated rates in here, and then as they were transferred into the Word document, we had some clear errors. And so in the future, we've looked at this, we've tightened up our process. We're going to have much tighter version control on things, and then we won't be transferring the rates from what we're calculating them into some type of a what's really meant more for our users. So we've looked at how the mistakes were made, corrected our process. In the future, I think it'll be much simpler for you to see. In the meantime, what we wanted to do is just notify you of these are the mistakes that we found, and they were like, you know, the winter and summer rates were reversed for some of the rates, et cetera. So they're all outlined in red with strike through in there. And I apologize for any confusion this may have caused, and have taken steps to remedy it so that we'll see this in our process in the future.
So it looks like on the monthly guest mortgage, it went from 45 to 40. That's more than a dollar. So is there, on the monthly mortgage guest monthly winter rate on page 11, am I correct in that it went from 45 to 40?
Where?
On the 35 foot.
No, that's 404 a month.
Yeah,
that's 404. Oh, 404, okay.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Got it,
okay. And I'm a little confused by that too. What was that?
So it was 405. We lowered it to 404. And we did that because then when you put it into TMP, it comes out to the round number. And
TMP being the software program that they
use. Right.
Yeah. And it just, the headache that it would have caused with these rounding errors just would have been tremendous for us to be chasing down a couple pennies for.
So what was 50 in the guest mortgage winter? You have 639 in the errata sheet.
And it was 640.
It's kind of hard to read these. Yeah.
Right.
That's why it's.
Yeah. And that's again, that's why we're going to this form. So.
So just how married are we to this TMP? And I mean, my association with computer programs, they do whatever you tell them to do, and they can take your dollar and make it work. So is this like a beginner's training wheel type program?
We have some issues. There were some updates that we're looking at getting installed. We are assessing whether or not TMP is the best software package for us. As we move forward, definitely for this season, for this year, we won't be making any changes. There are some other functionalities that are not easy to come by in this, so we are definitely assessing whether it's the best software for us.
So from us, you just want us to approve it?
Yes.
This sheet?
Mm-hmm.
This sheet?
The errata sheet that's included in here. And really, it's these again. I would quantify them as clerical and ministerial changes, but they do differ from what was printed. I just wanted to make you aware of them. I believe that it's within the purview of staff to just go ahead and make these changes. But if you'd like to approve them, that would be fine.
So this little sheet here is all these sheets together, all condensed into this little.
It is the boat, just the boat haven.
Right, but it's
Beethoven permanent.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. But it has the money and all that.
Exactly, it's way easier to deal with.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Okay.
It's just so it can get so committed, just so you see the data. It's a little easier. Like I put it into a matrix, so you can compare like. The travel list is just a lot easier than if you're trying to go through that Word document.
Yeah.
And then if you were to get even if you read the Word document, you're going through it, it can get really confusing.
Yeah.
You know, you stare at it enough times. So I think just seeing it in a matrix like that will be pretty easy for you.
It'll make it way easier. It will dramatically reduce the chances of having clerical and ministerial mistakes like this. We're also in that part of the process. We're really outlining so that before we bring them to you, we'll actually have Gene in accounting or clerk actually run some of the sample numbers to see how they come up. So we've modified our process already, but okay, this did not go as smooth as we wanted to.
I'm good with it.
Okay. Make a motion. Do you need a motion?
I don't think we need a motion, actually.
All right. And E.
E.
Oh, no, we already did that.
No, that was for the curb. Curb, this is a different curb grant. Oh, no, we did that one for Colson, didn't we?
Yeah.
How do we get these?
What? We have it in there. Was it, we're only doing one curb grant? This time?
Yes.
Okay.
Oh, yep, yeah, the other's just... Oops.
Come on, guys. All right, so we're striking E from the agenda?
Mm-hmm.
All right, moving on to staff comments.
Hey, I'd like to first start out with commending staff for the exceptional work they've done in the follow-up for the travel lift. I mean, I think it's sometimes hard to appreciate how much effort that goes into really provide all the documentation, find a structural engineer, work with the insurance companies, make sure that the options that we're looking at will actually fit into buildings, et cetera. And so this has all been, you know, as is the case with accidents, you know, they give you not only the effects of the accident, but usually the follow-up work that you have to do to try to return things to normal. So especially Greg and Abigail, I'd like to commend them, but really the entire board staff, they've all been working this issue, and we're looking forward to getting back up to speak quickly. Second, I have, as you know, we are seeking potential funding for an integrated planning grant through our delegation in Olympia, and sent a letter to our delegation to that effect. Mr. Tucker will be following up with some phone calls on that, so we can read this. But I've also spoken with Department of Ecology. They both the Southwest Regional Director for the Toxic Program, as well as the Brownsville Program Manager. And I would characterize it as when we look at our yard and what we're proposing, from first glance, it doesn't appear to be a really natural fit for this grant program, but once we describe to them what we're wanting to do, they concur, yes, this is a good fit. So depending upon what happens with the budget this year in Olympia, and we'll see how we come out with it. If we are successful in having it, the budget proviso added, I'm not sure what the processing time, because then we'll then need to work with the Department of Ecology on an agreement. So not quite sure how long that time will take. I'm also not willing to put a probability number on chances of success at this point. It's just that few many cards in the air. And I've also sent off the stormwater letter to Department of Ecology Water Quality Program, requesting a meeting with them and requesting an amendment to the administrative order so that we can pursue the approach that I described in the workshop last month, and did receive just a perfunctory email back from them that they would be reviewing that this week, and I expect to hear from them tomorrow. So I will keep you apprised of that response as well. I forgot to bring my jar of water over with the clay in it. Anybody wants to stop by, I'll show you my stormwater sample. And it is really evident in looking at it that what is significantly contributing to our metal transportation is the amount of clay in our water. We have a jar of water in it, and it sat for 96 hours, and still just a lot of soil in suspension. So that's really indicative of clay. And I think that's it for me.
Well, you're kind of working substantially on the travel lift and the close out of the claim. So the Bernice, which was the vessel that that dropped in the water there, finished up, and they launched, I think it was the day before yesterday. So submitting all the receipts and all the detail to our insurance carrier. And the boat owner, you know, I have to commend Mike Deach, who's just fantastic to work with, and who was still follow-up and, you know, reached out to me when there was, I asked him if there were any critical milestones or any uncertainty, followed up on everything. He's just been really, a really great customer, and he has his 90-footers in here having much more work done to St. Michael. So I think he seems like he's pretty happy with the way it all turned out, and we're processing all the invoices. So we're going to hopefully be closing that out in the very near future. We worked with John Cobb. We have still a couple more potential buyers, and we're just following through on, you know, each and every opportunity to see if we can get that purchased and transferred to another party that's a responsible party. Went down to Quilcene and been down to Quilcene a few times now. I did a walkthrough with Jim and also with TJ Quant, and put together kind of an operating plan and a punch list. And then we went down again with maintenance as well. And yesterday, and did another walkthrough. And so we're putting together kind of a comprehensive plan, as well as we're trying to put a formulation together for the potential revenue plan for that whole facility. And also working with Pure Gold and Coast and any of the other tenants to give them a pretty clarity in terms of where we're heading with that overall facility. So we have a staffing plan that we were talking about and put together. So make sure that we handle any of the tribal fisheries as well as recreational fisheries, both crab and shrimp. That doesn't seem to be a problem. We've done that over many years. So we feel pretty comfortable with that. And then, it's a major facility, and there's a lot to do down there. So, we're also pursuing some of the other, you know, working with other derelict vessels to make sure that we are proactively trying to address any issues with those. So there's a few out there. We have a couple in the yard. One in the yard, we've had a couple people reach out to us that they want to actually buy it. So you have to go through the due diligence with DNR, obviously, to transfer that over and make sure all the T's are crossed and the I's dotted. So again, we don't want to we're not just trying to get rid of a problem. We're actually trying to make sure it goes to a responsible party. But that's going pretty well. And then we submitted for the grant with the state through the PLIA. And we've already got it returned. And so we're going through the secondary review for that. And
what's PLIA?
The pollution liability. Exactly.
Oh, the underground airport tank.
For the USD, for the underground storage tank. USD. So anyway, they accepted it, except for that said, okay, they'd come back to give you a secondary. So we're processing that. And also just want to thank Al Cairns, because he actually brought that option to us for that grant sourcing originally. So appreciate it. Thanks, Al. And then we met with Wooden Boat Foundation and talking about the upcoming festival. And then also we had a meet and greet with PTMTA and a lot of the trades. And I just want to thank everybody that reached out. And it was a good opportunity to meet a number of people. And, you know, unfortunately, I haven't been able to reach out and meet everybody. But it was really, really nice that they put that together. And we countered back to the U.S. Coast Guard on the lease and waiting to hear back from them. And then trying to, you know, proceed with any number of other leases too, to try to keep them moving forward here.
You got any?
Sure. I'll go over the financial report in a minute. I worked with Greg on that grant, plea grant, getting the financial documentation and completing the financial section. Glad to hear we got a response. I'm curious what it looks like. I'm working with Pacific Office Equipment on placement options for the admin building copier, which is just, it's coughing along and doing the best it can, but it has a lot of demand on it. Gets like, averages like 4,000 copies a month in just black and white and about 2,000 color. So we've had it about 7 years, I think it is. Anyway, so I'm looking at the options there, whether buy or lease, that sort of thing. also looking IT, getting IT to look at replacements for our servers, and that was part of our capital budget. The servers are about 7 years old, which is pretty old for a server, especially when they're so key to our organization. As I said, it's in the capital budget, and we're hoping to get that in place in the next several weeks. Then also, you know, getting your Surface, Mr. Tucker, which we're kind of the trial run. If you like it and works well for you, I'll proceed with getting two more for the rest of the commissioners, because those iPads are not working so well. Participated in the interviews for the communications and marketing coordinator as far as the follow-up analysis on the potential best candidate. Worked with Touchstone Eco Services on the resolution at the wetland mitigation at the airport. Apparently, the plantings did not happen last year, and so ecology came back, asked how it's going, and we have to do the plantings this year. So.
Are we talking about the wetland that we had to create for mitigation for the ditch? That one's not working good?
The one that's over by the Arrow, where the wetland got disturbed, and so they piped it into the drainage ditch, and so it became dry instead of wet. So
was that our fault?
Yeah. That was the Arrow Museum's initiative.
I'm currently reviewing the file and the affidavit to brief the commission once I get through the review.
Also worked with a consultant to get better access to Eric's computer while he's been out, because of course we need, you know, files and we need emails, and since he has a Mac, it's been kind of tough to sometimes access. So that was really good. Plus getting all of his documents, which are precious documents, off his desktop and on the server, where they backed up. So that was really good to get that. And then you have the January report, and January starting off a little slow this year. Looks slow on both ends, though. I mean, we're just over 5% in revenues as well as expenses. And it's just the beginning of the year, so.
I'm confused by this report, Abby. You're saying operating is off by 7,800.
Where are
2015.
You?
I'm on page, whatever it is, this picture with the bar graphs.
Yeah.
So you say operating is off by 7,800, and yet it looks to me like it's more like 34,000. A little under 34,000.
It's 358. Is the 2016?
Oh, you used 215 in your comment at that on that paragraph.
It says operating revenues are 7,800 less, and if you look at 16, it's 358. And you look at 17, it's 350. So that's the 7,853.
Yeah. What he's saying is that first line says less than in 2015, and it should have been 2016.
Oh, okay. Yeah, you're right. Yeah. Missed that. Thank you. Yeah, because why would you want to compare to 15? It makes no sense.
And you did all the way through all 15.
No. Oh, it is. Thank you. I'll correct that. The rest of the numbers are good as far as the variances and the percentages. And I do have other people look at this, so it's not just me.
Mm-hmm. We all missed it.
But we are a little busy. So, as I said, starting off slow in the year, but at least our revenues are about the same as the expenditures as far as percentage of budget. And, you know, we have the WIP for the commercial base and breakwater, which was actually completed in February, so we'll wrap that up February. And cash balances are relatively, they just went down by a couple hundred thousand, which is about right. I just wanted to mention too that this report, the budget to actual on the third page, that's following the same format as the budget that we did for 2017. We'll provide more detailed budget to actuals quarterly. So in April, we should have a quarterly that includes January through March.
Yeah, I like this page. It's a nice format. It's
yeah.
a good brush of what's going on.
Do you have any other any questions or other errors?
No.
Comments?
Sue?
No.
All right. Moving on to public comments. One more shot at public comments. Can we wake everybody up? Wow, everybody's quiet. Okay, commissioner comments.
Okay, on the IBC, I did talk to Mike Chapman yesterday, and he said that he put the proviso through, and he'll be shepherding it along and keeping it up to date. I have an appointment. I should be seeing Kevin in person on Friday, so I haven't had a chance to talk to him yet. And the NODC, I went to that meeting, and we had our new director of the NODC, the one that that replaced Kate Dean when she became a county commissioner, Karen Afield. She was the one that was in the workshop this morning. She's going to be really good, I think. And it was kind of an introduction to her and her to us. But also, at the same time, there was a presentation of a fellow that was trying to get to do a poultry processing trailer, which I was surprised no one mentioned this morning at the ag meeting, but there are opportunities out there. This one is probably premature for us, but it's the kind of thing that the NODC gets opportunities occasionally like that. So, and that's all I have.
Yeah, I just was going to bring up a quick briefing on this morning. We port is moving towards initiating our industrial development bond or district, and that is going to be, I believe, Madam Director, that's going to be countywide. Is that correct in terms of the district boundary?
The commission adopts that. That's what we have spoken about, yes.
Yes. So one of the things that we are concerned with is that, you know, we don't take these funds and just dump them into the black hole of Point Hudson. And so this morning we looked at opportunities countywide and specifically at agricultural opportunities. And it was a very robust discussion, ranged from meat packing to cold storage to other things. And it was very exciting. It was exciting to see a lot of networking around the table. And I think that's the part that I get most excited about is we're bringing a lot of different communities together. And so we could really, I think, serve as a catalyst to do some interesting things in the community at large. And that's it. So from here, we'll move on into our executive meeting. And we'll adjourn this and then move into our executive. And then we'll return back in 30 minutes.
Thank you.